Aloha, ladies and germs, and welcome back to the Driving Play podcast. You may not have believed that we would ever revive this podcast, but we're back in a bit of a vintage form tonight, without Jared or Brent. But I am Chase, of course, and I'm going to be your host this evening. I am joined by Matt.
What's up, guys?
And a special guest who takes a bit of a contrast to our approach, in that he actually likes to watch the game, so I'm not sure why anybody would do that. Wastes a lot of time, effort, and energy, but he's a guy that some of our loyal listeners will definitely recognize. His name's Alex Pokornik, and he is the very esteemed play-by-play man of the McMaster Volleyball Squad. He's about to start their quest for the national championship here soon. Alex, welcome, and thanks for joining us tonight.
Chase, Matt, thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
Excellent. All right, so one of the reasons, other than providing a bit of a contrast to the way we like to look at the game, is Alex is a huge Calgary Flames fan, and they made a bit of news today with Ryan O'Reilly signing the offer sheet that Jay Feaster offered him for 2 years and $10 million. First question I'd like to ask Alex is, why do you think the Flames made a move like this? What do you think was behind Feaster's thinking in trying to go after O'Reilly?
Well, Feaster was actually on TV tonight and he spoke in between the second and third periods, and he said that basically the goal was trying to improve the team. And I think ostensibly they realize that they need to improve. We're going to talk about it a little later tonight that they certainly haven't received the kind of luck that maybe they deserve, but this isn't a team that's going anywhere, even if they do get to the playoffs. They need pieces both now and for the future. And I think it's very rare when you get an opportunity to pick up a center like O'Reilly at 22 years of age, who already does a lot of things really well. He's a 200-foot player. He has the potential to be elite in both ends. At the very worst, he probably ends up like a poor man's Patrice Bergeron, or maybe even at the same level or comparable. So I think this was a move that was really enticing for Calgary. I just think, unfortunately, with Colorado being in the same division, it made the mechanics of acquiring O'Reilly very difficult. And ultimately, you see what happened tonight with all the drama.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. One thing I've noticed about O'Reilly, and the Bergeron comparison is definitely very, very close. His underlying numbers last year were really good. He drove play trademark to a huge extent, and was, definitely one of Colorado's best centers. And I think a good follow-up question to that is, what do you think they do now moving forward with kind of whiffing on O'Reilly and going forward in the post-O'Reilly era, which was about, maybe a few hours at most, if you will.
Yeah, it's that was kind of like my Flames fandom in a nutshell tonight. We had a potential franchise center for 3 hours, and then he was ripped out of our hands, and then blew a 3-0 lead to boot. I think Feaster seems like a bright guy, and I know he's made some questionable decisions, but a lot of his decisions have been dictated by what the market offers him. O'Reilly was an opportunity that was available. I don't really know if there are a lot of guys that are of similar ilk in the market right now. I don't know what the deadline brings. I think some interesting things that I would take out of this, the fact that Calgary was willing to part with their first round pick in a year where a lot of people think if things continue to go sideways, that could be a lottery pick in a very, very deep top end of the draft. When you look at MacKinnon, Jones, Drouin, and Barkov as being a top four, and Calgary apparently is okay with moving that pick, that might be a piece that you'll see come alive at the deadline. But I think it's pretty clear that they're looking for pieces that can help them to win now. And I know O'Reilly's a piece that would have been very good for the future down the road, and that's what made him so attractive. But I think it's very clear that Feaster and John Weisbrod and the rest of that front office hasn't given up on the idea of trying to win with this group. And I know that's kind of controversial, but when you have all that money in contracts with Camilleri and Weidman and Hudler, you can kind of understand why they still think they need to try and put together a winning product instead of tanking and kind of doing the thing that their neighbors up north in Alberta have done.
I think that's a pretty good point too, because even though it might sound controversial, we'll talk about this more later, but I don't think the Flames are necessarily that horrible. A lot of their problems have been goaltending, obviously, this year. Losing Kiprusoff's been absolutely huge for them. But you talked about O'Reilly and doing this for maybe being set for the future. Another question I have with this move is, if you're going to make it, why not offer him the 7-year deal, for a comparable salary? Because that seemed exactly the type of thing that Sherman wanted to avoid in these negotiations. We've already seen PK Subban sign, be lowballed by his team just so they could sign him to that 2-year deal where he'd still be an RFA coming off the contract. This contract's pretty much the exact same thing. So, I mean, why not go all out for the 7 years and force Sherman to make a really tough decision based on something that he's been trying to avoid by not signing O'Reilly up to this point.
Yeah, we had talked about that a bit, Chase, in our lead up to this program, and I think I can see reasoning on both sides. Certainly from O'Reilly's perspective and his camp's perspective, now there are rumors percolating that O'Reilly and his father were looking at ways to get out of Colorado in any way possible. And if there was a long deal that was tendered to them, I think the last thing that they wanted to end up in was a situation that Shea Weber has, where he signed a rather extravagant contract in terms of length, and now with it being matched by Nashville, technically he could be there for the rest of his career. I don't think if they really wanted to get out of Colorado, that was an ideal situation. From Calgary's perspective, I even had this two-year deal gone through. They still have a lot of cap issues like they have to work through going into next year. We know the cap number is coming down. Certain players are hitting UFA, the biggest of them being Jerome McGinley. But as I said a couple minutes ago, they have a lot of money still on the books. Camilleri, Tanguay, Weidman, Hudler. Those cap numbers aren't going down, despite the cap going down itself. So there were probably a lot of headaches that this was going to cause if it was successful. It would have actually been really interesting if O'Reilly had ended up with the Flames, the kind of juggling that Feaster would have had to do come July 1st, because there are a lot of pieces now. It would have created an interesting logjam. They do have both their amnesty buyouts available, but it would have been really interesting to see the kind of Mexican hat dance they would have had to pull off in order to make it all work for next season going forward and then even past then.
Yeah, definitely, definitely good stuff there. So you talked about Jerome McGinley, and obviously I don't mean to bring up a spot that's gonna raise your blood pressure a bit, but what do you think, if the team continues to play like this, what do you think the best thing for them to do there at the deadline would be, and, you know, just to set themselves up going forward?
Yeah, it really depends on the kind of package that you'd get. And the old adage is that if Gretzky can be traded, anybody can be traded, and certainly I'm not making that kind of comparison at these points in their career or at any point in their career. But the point being, I think Feaster needs to have an open mind. It would be a very difficult pill to swallow, but you need to be realistic with yourself. Having said that, if you're going to get lowballed for an offer, I don't think they should feel like they have to move him. By all indications, McGinley wants to stay. He doesn't want to leave. If he wanted to go, quite frankly, he would have been gone. There would have been plenty of opportunities for him to ask out over the last couple of years. And I don't think it's out of the question that McGinley signs more of a team-friendly deal next year as well. He is 35. He's not going to put up the same type of numbers that he's put up in seasons past. I don't think he really commands $7 million a year anymore in the open market. I think there's a very good chance you could see him sign an Alfredson type of deal next year, the type that kept Alfredson in Ottawa up until the end of this contract. I just think for the Flames, they have to be transparent with themselves, at least listen to offers and then see what happens going forward. I think Calgary can move on without him. They've got some young pieces in place, and certainly they're going to have another young piece coming in now without moving their first-round pick. At the same time, I don't think having a Gimla around really hinders them going forward either. So be open, but don't feel the need to ship him out of town immediately.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. And one thing I think Feaster, if he's really kind of shrewd and smart, would do was maybe do something along the lines of what Detroit did with Kyle Quincy. Obviously, if you're going to get a player back for a pick, you're going to want something better than that. But they could possibly trade again, though, because he'll definitely fetch a first-round pick from a playoff contender in a heartbeat. That's the standard type of deadline deal that we've seen develop over the past few years. But if he could get a pick like that and then later parlay that into a roster player like Detroit did with Quincy, I mean, obviously you're going to want someone a little better. But if he can find someone who another team undervalues, you know, they could take that pick, get a new good roster player going forward. And, you know, Aginla's the type that I could see after, you know, going somewhere else, going playing for another team during a playoff run and then re-signing with Calgary in the offseason just because he's a free agent. He loves it there. So I honestly would not put it out of the question that he leaves, you know, plays a playoff run, but then Calgary would be first on his list on the UFA market as far as wanting to come back and finish his career there.
I think the other thing that should be mentioned, if they do move McGinley for a first-round pick, it gives them flexibility with respect to how they draft in the first round, especially if they come out of the lottery. And I'm kind of the opinion that past the obvious lottery picks, and we're going to talk a lot about McKinnon and Jones and Drouin and Barkov going forward, I think that second tier becomes a lot murkier when you start to look at Sean Monahan's of the Ottawa 67s, Hunter Shinkaruk of the Medicine Hat Tigers. These guys are far from a sure deal. Not like the top four. So if you have two first-round picks at your disposal and you feel like you can take one that's more of a sure NHLer who has more of a predictable curve, then you can get a little more aggressive with your second pick. That's something that they should also consider as well.
Yeah, the Flames are a really interesting team because I think they, like you said, they can go either way at this point, but with some shrewd maneuvering, if Feaster's on top of things, I think that they can, you know, come out of this as a playoff team if they manage their assets correctly. And another part of that is definitely going to be finding someone other than career AHL guys to play goaltender, which I'm sure you've seen enough of at this point after watching McDonald and Irving.
Yeah, and Danny Taylor too. Yeah, it's been bad. And it's funny, as bad as Kiprusoff had played, it looked like he was starting to turn a corner in the game that he got hurt. He had a very strong 40 minutes against Detroit, and it's been a very fateful stretch for Calgary, losing Kiprusoff and Backlund in quick succession.
Yeah, that was rough. Matt, do you have anything to add here?
I think, I definitely agree that Feaster is a very sharp guy here. I don't necessarily know how much we can read into them going so hard after Ryan O'Reilly into any future moves, just because, you know, we sort of mentioned this. This was really just a very unique circumstance when you had such a good young player in such a murky situation with his former and now current team. You know, I'm, you know, when you guys have been speaking here, I've been trying to think of other players that they could sort of try to buy low on, you know, who still fit the, you know, the parallel fronts, to quote Theo Epstein, of, you know, a player that can help you today and a player that can help you 4, 5, 6 years from now. It's interesting for them because, you know, I definitely applaud the move, but I am just having trouble finding sort of, you know, something that they can, you know, like some sort of plan that they can commit to try to get a, you know, an elite asset going forward. So I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where these guys they don't grow on trees. And when you do come across one, it's not like you're very willing to get rid of that guy in the second place. And I think when we were talking about earlier before the program started, we were wondering what kind of package Calgary may have offered in a trade before they signed the offer sheet. Even a piece like a Michael Backlund, who isn't necessarily on the same level as O'Reilly yet, or might not be on the same level, but has played some really good hockey for Calgary. That's not really a guy you want to move in order to get a slight upgrade. That's kind of a sideways move. So it's one of those things where these assets don't become available very often. And Matt, you make a really good point. This is a very unique circumstance. Although Feaster did say in his interview today, he wants to keep trying to find avenues to improve this club. So I don't think Calgary is done. It might not necessarily be a similar player, but there will be other moves going forward for them.
Yeah, one quick point I wanted to go back and make about Quincy. I went and looked it up. It looks like he was traded to Tampa for Steve Downey and then immediately flipped to Detroit for that first-round pick. So I guess if the Flames wanted to do something like that, it would be kind of Quincy in reverse, but they could still take the pick they would get from McGinley, and they could use it to trade for an asset like Quincy as well.
Yes, so one thing that I think, obviously, that'll have a big impact on how they proceed, you know, throughout the rest of the trading period is, you know, the fact that they've got a very highly regarded prospect in the pipeline in Ramo, and by all, basically everything that's been written about him has been that he is, you know, the next goalie in Calgary. So at least they don't necessarily have to fight hard to, you know, because one route that they would make sense for them to go down if they didn't have somebody in the pipeline would be to try to parlay a roster player into a pick and then try to pick up a Ben Bishop or Robin Lehner type. So at least they can focus then on just trying to get, you know, a younger roster player that can help them, you know, in the future. So speaking of the Flames, we teased the fact that they're a pretty good team that's just gotten tremendously terrible luck. So since we have Alex on, he can speak better than just about anybody just to how bad things have been, you know, just how bad the bounces have been and everything. So why don't you just talk about how they played, obviously, and just take the wins out of it. Just, you know, how has the team played compared to how you thought things would be coming into the season? And, you know, how much hope you have to turn around and they could, you know, make a basically enter into the playoffs and go from there.
Yeah, certainly. And it's been a really, really trying season so far through 19 games. Tonight, and a lot of the run bad, it seems to be anecdotal, but I'll back it up with stats later. But, you know, tonight they've got a 3-0 lead in Colorado. They seem to have that game on lockdown. McDonald lets in a couple bad goals. And then the tying goal in the third period is, it looked like it was a kick. It looked pretty clear that Stassi kicked it in, and the referees decided otherwise. And that was kind of all she wrote after that. But it's been a couple things. One certainly has been goaltending. And even when Kiprusoff was healthy, he wasn't providing the type of goaltending that they needed, although it looked like he was starting to turn around. Then he gets hurt, and it's been a bit of a circus with Irving, Taylor, and McDonald not really being able to provide the type of goaltending that you need to win at this level. It's been very, very substandard, and that's really hurt them. The other thing, too, they've run into a couple key injuries, and the biggest injury, without a doubt, is Michael Backlund. If you guys follow Kent Wilson on Twitter, which I'm sure you do, he's a manager of the Nations Network. Wilson released a tweet today. This one blew my mind. In the games where Backlund has been healthy and dressed, Calgary has a plus 35 scoring chance differential. In the games where Backlund hasn't dressed, and that's every game after their Columbus victory, the 4-3 win in OT, their scoring chance differential is minus 5. That is a drastic contrast in the way that they're being able to dictate play. Backlund is a huge part of their plans going forward, and he's a guy that they really rely on down the middle. The thing that they really got out of him the first 10 games or so before he got hurt, when he was playing on a line with Glenn Cross and Stempniak, it was a line that they could shut down opposition's top lines with. It was able to get a Ginla and Tongue more softer minutes. It was also able to get the Czechs softer minutes, but they've run into some serious injury trouble. Backlund's been hurt. Berchi's been hurt. A kid who I thought was going to have a chance at Rookie of the Year, and he's never really got going since his hip flexor injury. But that's the bad luck part of it, and they were top five in Fenwick close for most of the start of the year. I know that's dipped now. They're kind of more around 14th, 15th, I believe, after some really poor performances. But their PDO is still very low. If it's not last in the league, it's pretty close to last. So that indicates that they're not really getting the good fortune of bounces. Look, I think they've improved under Hartley, and Hartley said they'd be more exciting. They said that they'd be more up tempo. I'm seeing that. Jay Bomeister is having a fantastic year. He's being allowed to jump into play. He's been given the green light. And I think long-term, regardless of the pieces that are there, at least they've made a commitment to playing a different type of game. It's not the kind of negative hockey that we saw under Brent for 3 years, Brent Sutter. It's been a completely different philosophy that's been implemented here, and that's a lot of fun. I sincerely hope that the luck changes. I just don't know if it's going to change in time for Jerome to see another playoff run with Calgary. But I want them to focus on the fact that they're playing good hockey and not being rewarded. And hopefully, with some better health and some better goaltending, that's going to turn around.
Yeah, I think a lot of the points you made there are really solid. One thing about their PDO is currently 972. I guess that was before tonight's game. But their save percentage at 5v5 looks like around 896, which is obviously really bad. I'm not sure if McDonald and Irving are that bad, but then again, I'm also not sure their league average. So, maybe a lot of their problem truly is just, you know, the 40 or the 30 some points that they're missing from just the difference between league average goaltending and McDonald and Irving. I think with someone like Kiprusoff, who, you know, we know is league average or possibly a little better, he's been great over his career, the luck would possibly be a little different for them. I also agree that the injuries have killed them, because like you said, the Backlund thing and everyone going out has really kind of coincided with their dip in possession numbers. So I think they're definitely better than people tend to let on. The problem is just going to be getting these guys healthy and getting them back into the lineup. And even in a short season, if it doesn't happen, they finish last in the league, they could get that top pick and be right back into it next year. So I don't necessarily think that they're that terrible, and hopefully they won't, you know, make a bunch of panic moves just because they think they aren't. And like exactly like Columbus last year, they were a great team before Arneal. With Arneal and Carter in the lineup, they were a very, very good possession team. They just didn't have the goaltending, and Housen ended up making a bunch of panic moves trying to save his job, and look what happened to him in the end. So I don't think Feaster will have that problem, and I think he's a pretty sharp guy. I know they've talked publicly about a guy that they hired to look, you know, at analytics and stuff and possibly look deeper into this stuff. So I think they're definitely in a good spot going forward. And even if your misery lasts one more season, they could definitely come out of it better in the long term.
Well, we've seen teams that have some short-term bad luck parlayed into some pretty significant picks. Chase, you'd be familiar with that with Philly.
I exactly would, and I'm still kind of angry we lost that lottery, but what are you going
to
do?
You know, it happened to Philly. It happened with Jersey. We were able to get Adam Larson out of it. It's not necessarily a terrible situation, and from a lot of the junior hockey that I've watched this year, I didn't really get a chance to see too much of Barkov past the World Juniors, but the other three guys I've seen quite a bit of, Jones, McKinnon, and Drouin, and I really believe they're a big four. If you pick in that territory, I'm really of a belief that you're taking a guy that's an impact player, if not right away, very, very soon. We got a highlight right now of Drouin that's making the rounds in the Canadian sports shows of a shift where he pretty much dominates an entire team by himself.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's amazing.
You know, these are kids that, and it's a young man's game now, and we're seeing guys like Huberto in Florida that are contributing right away, and there are examples of, you know, Eberle certainly has had a fantastic start to his career in Edmonton. These kids can come in right away and contribute.
Couturier,
thank you.
You're a little cold, sorry.
Yeah, that was my Canadian bias up there, eh? So, sorry about that. But, yeah, I mean, there are positives to, there's a silver lining if it continues to go sideways. It's just hopefully they understand that it will get better before it gets worse. And you don't want to see a lot of panic moves. This franchise has seen far too many panic moves during my lifetime. I'd really be happy if I didn't see any more for a while.
Yes.
One thing that certainly gives me hope that they won't make a panic move is it seems like, at least obviously for the time being, Feaster has a pretty long leash. It doesn't, you know, with Hausen, you know, he was fighting for his job. This isn't a baseball podcast, but it's reminds me somewhat of Dayton Moore in Kansas City. I'll leave it at that. But, you know, Feaster, at least he's got another few years to try to make things work. So he doesn't have to necessarily, you know, swing for the fences. And, you know, anybody who tries to claim, you know, not that anybody would say something like this, that, you know, he's trying to fight for his job by signing a Ryan O'Reilly type to an offer sheet is obviously crazy. As you know, because as we mentioned, that's a very unique circumstance. But I mean, I think things aren't too bad at all.
Yeah, I come across feeling the same way. That's what I get out of it. I think in terms of Feaster's leash, and I'm happy you brought that up, I would have to think it's certainly not the end of this year, because you just brought in Hartley. There's absolutely no way you're only going to give a coach 1 year, and especially a coach of Hartley's pedigree. The fact that he was able to make that move and the fact that he's pretty confident in the regime that he's put together, I'm going to say he has a timeline of at least 2.5 years. If next year doesn't go so well and then they end up starting to look like they're a very sideways project, then I think you're going to start to hear some grumblings. And it's, you know, the fact of the matter is they're in a very visible market that's under a big microscope. But I don't think you're going to start to hear those grumblings until at least a year and a half from now at most. So I do think he's got more of a leash than his predecessor had near the end. But, you know, they do need to show some tangible improvements, though, because missing the playoffs extendedly, or that's not even a word, missing the playoffs for an extended amount of time in a market like that doesn't really sit well with the fans.
All right, well, yeah, I think that's a great place to wrap up our Flames talk. I think we've covered them pretty well. We've noted most of the good things they have going for them. But just kind of to segue off the idea that the Flames are a team that isn't as bad as they seem, which just is running into poor luck. On the other side of the coin this year in the NHL, we've seen a few teams who seem to be, you know, really great, but have really, their underlying numbers don't really back that up, and a lot of their success has been through goaltending. And one of those teams out west has been the Anaheim Ducks. All right, you just want to talk about Anaheim and what you've seen with them so far?
Well, I mean, it's pretty simple. They've got the highest shooting percentage 5-on-5 in the NHL. You know, it just, you know, a shade under 10.3%, and they're also way high up there on the power play as well. You know, shooting, you know, 20.63%, just barely being eclipsed by the Washington Capitals. So, you know, they're towards the bottom of the league in any possession metric that you want to look at. So it's basically just a whole bunch of shooting luck, which I can't see something that's not something that's going to really be very sustainable. And for as well as obviously Daniel Winnick started out, you know, playing very well for them, and you know, Saku Koivu is, you know, a nice player, and obviously Teemu Selanne is the ageless wonder. But other than that, you know, they're a one-line team, and they've got Cam Fowler, and, you know, it's not a particularly great team. It's just a mediocre team that looks very good because pucks are going in, but I don't think those pucks are going to be going in the entire season.
Foss, too, it's been a huge thing for them, just coming over and all of a sudden playing at levels better than Dominik Hasek played his entire career. I mean, that's obviously not going to last. As good as Foss is, I love the contract they signed him to. It's a great deal, but, I mean, he's just not going to be that good going forward, and it'll be interesting to see where he pans out as far as how good he actually is, but he's not going to be a 940 goaltender. That's just, no one's going to argue that, and it's just something that's worked out well for them. It's allowed them to bank a whole bunch of points, but, I mean, when I see the national pundits putting them near the top of the power rankings, I just kind of have a chuckle because they're obviously not going to be that good.
One thing I would bring up about Foss, and since we had a couple baseball references already, the one thing you do see with goaltenders that come in and make a big impression early, remember, shooters got to figure out the tendencies for a guy like Foss too, and there isn't a whole lot of film with him in an NHL level yet, and when that does get compiled, I think that's when you see if Foss can stand the test of time, especially with the type of analytics departments you've got in these teams now. They are breaking down film all the time. They're going to look at tendencies. They're going to look at the ways you can beat him. It's obviously a great start, but a lot like pitchers early on in the majors, if you don't have a lot of footage on their stuff or if you don't know their tendencies, it's a little harder to hit them. I'm not really sure he's going to be able to sustain that, but he put up some very good numbers in the Swedish Elite League too, so I think that's a really, really interesting guy to look at going forward, especially next year. I'd love to see the kind of numbers he puts up, especially if Anaheim doesn't end up being able to retain both Perry and Getzlaff and could get even worse as a possession team from there.
These are definitely great points. This is why we bring you on for the watch the game perspective. This kind of stuff blows our minds.
Yeah, I've never seen anything about this in a spreadsheet.
The second team we wanted to talk about as far as the getting a little luckier than their results actually show department goes are the Toronto Maple Leafs, who behind Ben Skrivesna and Optimus Rhyme have been stopping every single puck, regardless of how many times it flies off their body for a rebound in the slot. Everything seems to be stopped. So maybe, Alex, talk about what you've seen with the Leafs so far and why maybe you think that they're not quite as good as advertised.
They're a funny team because I've watched, other than Calgary, I've watched the Leafs more than any other team in the league, and I've seen them actually put together some very good games this year. Their win in Pittsburgh, I think, was probably their most complete effort of the year. That was a little earlier in the season. I've also seen them put up some absolutely terrible games. You don't need to look any further than the game last night against Montreal, where in a big rivalry game, they at home, they get outshot by Montreal 2-1. It was just a really atrocious effort. I don't really know what to make of them. I certainly don't think they're as good as they're advertised, but I do think that they have some interesting pieces, and you're starting to get maybe a taste of what it could look like when it all comes together. Two things I'd mention. One about the goaltending. They have certainly gotten some very lucky goaltending, and I would certainly use it. I would use luck as the operative term there, because it, No matter what game I watch, it always seems to me like Scrivens or Reimer, regardless of who's in net, ends up letting in a non-NHL goal. I have some serious concerns with Scrivens' mechanics. I hate his glove side mechanics. I hate the way that he holds his glove. Pacioretty's second goal in the Montreal-Toronto game the other night is a perfect example of a guy who's really let down by the way he squares up to shooters and the way he holds his glove arm. And he's been torched on a couple really bad goals this year, and I would expect that to happen more going forward if their save percentage numbers seem a little high. But the second thing I will say about Toronto, even though that they've got some holes in their lineup and They're not as good of a team as they look. There are some really exciting pieces going forward, and you don't need to look any further than Nazem Kadri, who had an outstanding game tonight in a game where most of his teammates were asleep and they still beat the Islanders in OT. Kadri was first, second, and third star as far as I'm concerned. And at least if you're a Toronto fan, and I know I'm speaking for my brother on this one, but there's been so little to look forward to. But now you can legitimately say with Kadri, with Matt Fratton, Van Riemsdyk has had a very good start, if only just from the offensive perspective. At least there are some pieces going forward where you may have a skeleton of a good team down the road. I think in terms of short-term success, it'll be interesting to see if they're able to sustain this. Even if they do, I can't see them being any more than a one-and-done team in the playoffs.
You pretty much hit the nail on the head on all points there. One thing I'll note, just being a bit of a homer about the Van Riemsdyk trade, is I think it's kind of ironic that that was Burke's last big fling, because it was a really good trade for them. Van Riemsdyk was, by all accounts, poised for this breakout. If you looked at his underlying numbers, the shot rate was there. He was just getting a little unlucky on his shooting percentage and things like that. And he was hurt last year, which also, you have to factor that into the equation. But he was ready for this breakout. And going forward, there was a lot of dismay on my part even about the contract Holmgren signed him to. But he could very well live up to that deal and be a great player for them. I mean, going 5 years into the future. I think that's going to be, like you said, there's definitely a skeleton of a team there as Kadri continues to get better. They just need a little back, or a little, Don Cherry would disagree, obviously, but they just need a little bottom six depth and, guys that can actually play in that role. And I think they're definitely a team to look for. Maybe one more, second pairing solid defenseman, but I mean, just a little help on the depth side of things. And I think you're right that they're going to be they're on the right track to being what Burke set out to do for them. I'm not sure the way he set out to do it was the right thing, kind of keeping them in the same spot for year after year. But I think with a few of these additions, they can definitely be a team that contends deep in the playoffs.
Definitely need to upgrade their blue line, though. And I know that Carl Gunnarsson got a lot of dap, I guess, I'm not sure if it was last season or the season before, for putting up what seemed to be some very good underlying numbers. But I think it's starting to become a little more apparent that when he was getting big minutes, a lot of that credit needs to go to Phaneuf, who, in kind of a weird contrast, has gone from being a really overrated defenseman to what I think is, he's probably a bit of an underrated defenseman now, in terms of he gets a lot of criticism, even though he takes on a lot of tough assignments for that team. Gunnarsson has been a bomb scare for Toronto. Koska is starting to look like the AHL defenseman that we kind of knew he was. They've had good contributions from guys like Holzer. Cody Franzen has really responded well to playing in a regular role instead of, doing the really almost impossible mission of playing once in every four nights. But if they are serious about going forward, they need to find at least another defenseman who can take on some tough minutes, give them a bit of a more flexibility in terms of the roles that they want to play them in. You look at a game that they lost late in Ottawa the other night when they have Koska and Gunnarsson on the ice and they're completely victimized on a simple play going in the net. That just can't happen if you're a playoff team. So they are at least another big piece away on the blue line. And I don't know what's going on with Gardner with respect to his concussion problems, but he's still with the Marlies right now. He's playing almost 30 minutes a night, with the baby club. So I don't know if he's going to come up at some point or what they've got going on right there, but they got a lot of defensemen under contract, and not a lot of them are really top-tier NHL guys. So that's another area they have to focus on going forward.
Well, yeah, just real quick about Gardner. I think he could be another one of these guys we're seeing, like with the Islanders holding down Niederreiter. I'm pretty sure that Tampa's holding down Brett Connolly. I think this new CBA and in the way contracts or UFA contracts are structured is going to force these teams to, keep these guys down as long as heavenly possible, especially if you're only gonna be a one and done playoff team anyway. I mean, who cares? Keep these guys down, let them develop, get them more minutes, and when they come up for their second contract, like what we saw with Colorado and O'Reilly, teams don't want to give these big second deals anymore. They want to keep them under team control as long as possible. Like same thing as Subban, and keep the price as low as possible on that second contract. So I think that could be part of the equation with Gardner, just kind of an aside there.
Yeah, I think so, because looking forward for Toronto, because I think we're all on the same page here where they're not you know, they're definitely not a playoff contender this year, but they certainly have the pieces to be a playoff contender. Honestly, is as soon as next year, if you sort of, you know, they're going to have, you know, a fair amount of cap space. You know, they're probably going to use their amnesty buyouts on Lyles and Komisarek, and, you know, they'll be able to probably get, you know, pretty good value on re-signing Carl Gunnarsson and Cody Franzen. And then you add Gardner to the mix, and, you know, you can have, you know, and then you can either trade for somebody or acquire another depth defenseman, and then, you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of reports linking them to Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaff or obviously any of the other big ticket free agents, but, you know, they'll be in a place where a move like that would actually make some sense because they have all of these pieces, and, you know, signing a Ryan Getzlaff or a Corey Perry isn't stupid anymore when they've got the space and, you know, a pretty good nucleus.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's a pretty good place to wrap this podcast up. Thanks again to Alex for coming on. That was some great stuff.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
If you want to follow him on Twitter, his handle is TheRealPoc. It's TheRealPoc. And you can follow tweets from Matt, Brent, Jared, and I from the same place, @DrivingPlay. Until next time, everybody, thanks for listening, and have a good one.